Long before the rise of Las Vegas, gambling, bootlegging, and prostitution was a $100 million a year business in the town of Hot Springs, Arkansas. And even though gambling was illegal, everyone from the governor of Arkansas down to the Hot Springs mayor, police, and fire departments turned a blind eye and kept an open hand out for bribes. By the late 1920s, Hot Springs was legendary as a popular hangout for many of America's most infamous gangsters, even notorious bank robbers like the Barker Gang and Bonnie and Clyde. Historians surmise that the reason there were no bank robberies in Hot Springs throughout the 20s, 30s, and 40s was because the bank robbers were hanging out in Hot Springs when they were off duty. Al Capone loved Hot Springs so much, he'd ship in his armored-plated Cadillac and book an entire floor in the swanky Arlington Hotel whenever he and his associates came to town. Back home on the streets of Chicago or New York City, mobsters such as Albert Anastasia, Benny Siegel, Mayor Lansky, Bugs Moran, Frank Costello, and Lucky Luciano might be archenemies, but when they came to Hot Springs, they were on neutral turf. The Gangster Museum of America is appropriately located in the heart of downtown Hot Springs on Central Avenue. Come along and listen in as the director of the Gangster Museum, Robert Raines, and Fred Mark Palmer, an associate of Raines who long ago worked at the mob-controlled Vapors Casino in Hot Springs. The duo talk about the era of the mobsters when top performers played gigs in town, like Brenda Lee, Al Marino, Phyllis Diller, Rosemary Clooney, Patti Page, Count Basie, and the Dorsey Brothers. And it was a late December day in 1961 when Tony Bennett first tested the song I Left My Heart in San Francisco in a Hot Springs nightclub. The very next morning, Bennett flew to San Francisco and premiered the soon-to-be classic song the following night in the Fairmont Hotel's Venetian Room. Robert Raines and Fred Mark Palmer.
And we'll attend their jubilee and see them spend their last 2 bits for none of it.
Robert Raines. We are in the Gangster Museum of America, the first museum dedicated to that genre.
And you got a old-timer here that was here in the day.
Actually was a greeter in the Vapors, which was a place where Phyllis Diller, Liberace had monthly gigs back in the days, so it was an unusual place.
Let's talk to him
let's
for a second.
That. Sure.
Hi, and you are?
Fred Mark Palmer.
Fred, what a pleasure.
So thank you.
You've lived here most of your life?
Yes, 71 years.
Tell us about back in the day. It was very different than now.
Very different. When I was young, this was a wide-open town. And you could just, Cadillacs, bumper to bumper, all going up and down the street, and big Lincolns and Chrysler Imperials, lots of big spenders in town.
So somebody said this was much bigger than Vegas. This was
Well, they didn't hold out taxes here. So if you were handling 200-something million a year, when a dollar was worth 12 times what it's worth now, and you had silver coinage in circulation, that was a lot of money, a lot of money.
I'm a little confused. Gambling was always illegal in
Arkansas,
but even in the day, it was illegal, and yet it was a wide-open gambling town.
Right.
It wasn't like it was secret speakeasy in the basement.
The governor got a weekly check.
Uh-huh. Right.
As did the state police and everyone else.
Everybody got paid. The sheriff, the judge, the mayor,
therefore,
everybody.
Therefore, it wasn't corruption. I mean, they didn't feel like it was corruption, because even the churches had tithes off the gambling.
Everybody
prospered.
Everybody won, yeah.
Yeah, until Rockefeller came along.
The police didn't want to run off tourists. So you could drive drunk, and as long as you didn't hit somebody, you were fine to go. Yeah.
Amazing.
They'd say, be careful going home.
Yeah, right.
It was quite a town.
They could still do that today, but...
How many casinos and gambling establishments were here?
There were 100-something places that had some form of gambling, and mixed drinks were against the law then, too.
Oh, really?
But their bars were everywhere. And so the police would come in and examine the liquor. In other words, they'd be getting free drinks.
Got to make their inspections.
Right, right. Yeah. And so you had no chance of getting arrested unless you got ugly with a policeman.
That also applied, and Mark will agree to this, to Lucky Luciano, Al Capone, Meyer Lansky was here as late as the late 70s. Frank Costello, regular guy here, came to the 73 Derby, I think. I mean, this was a place where it was okay to be whatever you were, poor, rich, didn't matter about your vocation, even if you were killing people. Albert Anastasia, right. He stayed here, wanted to move here. The governor wouldn't let him, thought it would look bad. And so it was just a cosmopolitan hole in the wall.
And another dynamic I find fascinating is somebody, an old-timer, told me that it was neutral territory.
Right, it was neutral ground.
So rival gangs would be walking down the street next to each other?
Absolutely correct. They had an understanding with the local political machine and regional gambling syndicate that they'd behave while they were here. Now, if they saw an enemy, they waited till they got back home to shoot him. Maybe you weren't supposed to do it here.
How fascinating. Very little shootings or anything bad ever happened here then.
Only the locals shooting each other.
The sheriff and the police department actually had a shootout back in the late 1800s.
But 1899.
They amongst each other. Wow. But it was over gambling, of course.
Sure it was. March 16th, 1899. Had five men killed out in the 700 block of, including the police chief and a high sheriff's son. And it's over the upcoming election and the gambling.
Did you work for the mob?
No.
Who were you employed by?
I worked for Dane Harris. He was the local spokesman for the gambling fraternity in this area.
And what did you do?
I was a greeter and I was a host. I took up cover charges. I put out advertising for the Vapors and that sort of thing.
The Vapors, that was one club? That was the name of a club?
That was one club, right. But Harris had interest in the Belvedere and a lot of other clubs here. Sometimes I got a kick out of taking the money to the bank for Mr. Harris.
I bet you
that
did.
That was fun.
Did you have a wheelbarrow?
No. I just have a nice bag. I have my own pistol in my car with me. I go down to what it was in those days, Arkansas Bank and Trust, and make deposits and stuff.
Amazing. It's incredible.
The FBI, back in 64, that article, according to the New York Times, the FBI said this was $100 million a year illegal gambling business. So it wasn't cheap change. It was big time.
And so a dollar was worth about $12 then. So that's $1.2 billion, $100 million in today's money. And most of it was not taxed.
Was there any competition in America, or was this the biggest?
There was a lot of competition. Yeah. With Nevada and Puerto Rico, they had legalized gambling. No one else did at that time. Yeah. They didn't think anyone else needed to have it. You understand?
Yeah. Well, let's go back to some of the entertainers that came here.
Yeah.
Some incredible people.
Well, we had all kinds of them. Al Martino and Phyllis Diller, Brenda Lee, Liberace, Rosemary Clooney, Patti Page. All of them.
The Dorseys. All of the big bands. Count Basie's piano player still lives here today. The son of Count Basie's, Ralph Porter Jr. And Malvern Avenue was considered Black Broadway. It's where Giancana set up the hit on Ted Rowe, who was a famous numbers racket guy from Chicago. So, it's not just white history here. It's a lot of black history, too, because all the black gangsters came here.
Right.
Every mobster, we say on some of our documentaries here that between the 30s, 40s, and 50s, there were no bank robberies in Hot Springs because all the bank robbers were here on vacation.
Right.
Dillinger was here. Alvin Karpus was here. Bonnie and Clyde were here.
Wow.
Frank Nash was here. Harvey Bailey was here. All of the notorious bank planning and bank robbers were here. They got married here. They vacationed here.
Right.
This was just a sanctuary for, it didn't matter what you did, you know.
And then Al Capone, he had his own room down the street.
He had his own
floor in
the Arlington.
Fourth floor. Wow. Now, when he first came here, he stayed at the Eastman, and it doesn't exist anymore. It was over where there's now a federal building. It was a whole city block. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rooms. He stayed there. Then when they got the new Arlington built, he started staying there.
At the same time, Tom, all of this was going on. This was a great center for religion, and it was the home of spring training baseball. This is where it started here. The Assemblies of God was started here when 300 different denominations sent representatives here to meet because they were, now they call it babbling, but they were talking in tongues and didn't understand the phenomena. So they came here because it was a dollar to get here and a quarter to stay from anywhere in the world. So they came here and down where there now is a parking deck next to Mountain Valley, the Assemblies of God was formed, and now there's 72 million people. And they did that in 4 days. And when they let, when they got through, they had an impromptu parade with a giant bass drum, because much to my delight, most of them were musicians. And so they deemed them in the Sentinel record Holy Rollers in 1904, which may have been the first time that term was used.
And that was right
here. I don't
here.
Know, because they were rolling the bass drum.
Right down Main Street.
Right down Central Avenue.
Back even in, you know, in the Gilded Age, you had your big millionaires vacationing here, like Andrew Carnegie, George Pullman, even William Randolph Hearst. They all came here. And the vaudeville and Broadway people, Anna Hill, Lillian Russell, Billy Burke, John Barrymore. Oh, boy. This was the place.
It
was incredible.
It probably was mostly due to the thermal baths, because before the invention of penicillin, they thought that over there was a cure for everything.
Including syphilis.
Absolutely. Right. We had a syphilis camp here, and Dr. Charles Wade, that the Wade Clinic still stands down there, the building next to the Arlington, thought he had a compound that he called 609 that would actually cure syphilis. But when penicillin was invented, they thought that would do it. So they cut off his research money, and some years later he died, and that
What's
study
What's interesting is the Hattery no longer exists. It was tore down. But it was where the Arlington has been expanded on the north end, and it stood between the Wade Clinic and the Arlington, the brothel.
Oh, funny. Yeah. Now, that's another dimension all along the bathhouse row here.
Every
upstairs.
Casino had a brothel on top.
Oh, there's something yeah. else in those days. And back before they passed all these federal controls over narcotics, you could go in a pharmacy and buy dope and across the counter here. You know, people come here from everywhere to mess
oh, yeah.
themselves.
There was a Chinese family that sold opium in a cart up and down the street.
Oh, yeah. And the mayor's brother, like Leo Patrick McLaughlin's brother, liked to smoke opium.
It's fascinating. Yeah, it's just amazing, really. Yeah.
And not that long ago, like you said, in history, the tail end of that era was not
67,
told.
Yeah. And it carried on kind of privately behind closed doors, probably up into in the 70s.
What did away with it totally was the RICO statute. Mm-hmm. When Congress passed the Anti-Crime Act in 1970, it made all this bribery a federal offense. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't pay the governor, the circuit judge, the sheriff anymore. They either enforced the law or they lost their job and they got indicted themselves.
Interesting.
Yeah. So and Bobby Kennedy had a lot to do with that.
Bobby Kennedy. Yeah. Right.
And actually, there's a picture in my book, which I'm going to gift to you.
Oh, cool.
There's What's a picture the name? In there of John Kennedy as an attorney sitting on the steps wow. of the Arlington talking to none other than Leo Patrick McLaughlin, the mayor, because everyone talked to him sooner or later when they came in town, as they did Owen Madden, who got out of Sing Sing and moved here in 1932, got married, lived here until 65, was a great supporter of Rockefeller, and had he not died, probably this would have become Las Vegas.
Unbelievable. What a hidden gem. Incredible.
Well, it's America's best kept secret.
Yeah, it is.
Mr. Harris, and I never ask him a lot of things. I just let him tell me, and I don't know. And he spoke of what he called the partnership. The same thing. And it was multi-ethnic. Okay, you see the movies, it's always Italian gangsters. Here, it was all kind of people. A lot of Native American Indian people, part white and part Indian. And Greek American, and Italian, and Jewish, and Irish, you know, and some ordinary Americans. They were real rich people. People had oil wells and timberlands, and they would bankroll these gamblers.
Well, you know what, guys? I'm going to have to come back for a reprise
Good.
Visit because I'm getting ready to fly home.
Wow.
Definitely going to come back. And I could spend a day here. Before I go, tell us a little bit about the museum.
The museum is a lot of artifacts, a lot of photos. Mostly the live tours tell the story of the history of Hot Springs. Not necessarily. We wrap it around visits of some of our most notorious people here.
So this whole museum is all about the
dedicated 10,000 square feet dedicated to the history of Hot Springs.
To the gangsters.
And to the gangsters, absolutely.
And the politicians, and the gamblers, and the celebrities, and sports.
Las Vegas. Your understanding that politics, at least in that day and time, was intertwined, closely intertwined with the mob. It had to be. That's the only way it would work. And whether it is today, I don't know. But today, Congress is run just like the mob.
Right.
They learned something from their forefathers right. on how to operate.
They got their own outfit.
You don't have to shoot yeah. people anymore. Mm-hmm. You just get pictures of them.
Right.
And, exactly. again, and tell us about your book. What's the name of it? And
how Hot Springs from Capone to Costello, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Sam's Club sells them. They're, it's been optioned by Beacon Pictures for a series, and they've shot 3 episodes. So we hope that'll be on HBO, or because the rub on it a few years ago when we started it was that Boardwalk Empire was kind of the same story, but earlier. So oddly enough, in history, Boardwalk Empire, when New Jersey closed due to Nucky Thompson, it was Nucky Johnson in the story, or he is Nucky Johnson, Nucky Thompson in the story.
They called him in the story.
Yeah. When he went to prison, he didn't die as the HBO series. When he died in New Jersey, Atlantic City shut down, Hot Springs blossomed in the mid-20s. Mm-hmm. So this is where they came. I mean, there's from everywhere. It wasn't just New Jersey. I mean, back in those days, California and Arizona and New Mexico and Florida had alligators and the rest of them had Indians. So.
Alfred Guy Rasso was another very colorful guy that I knew. And Mr. Rasso had the Bella Nova Italian restaurant. But when he was young, he wanted to be a cook in the U.S. Army in World War I.
Uh-huh.
And then he got to knowing the Capone brothers and then Frank Costello. So he became like a personal aide to them. And he cooked their meals for them and drive them around and all. Uh-huh. And they sent him here to live. And so he told me a lot of stories. And I asked him, I says, Mr. Guy, how come you never got to be a big boss? I didn't want to, kid. I said, well, why not? He says, all my friends killed each other and went to federal pen.
And what's your full name again?
Fred Mark Palmer, P-A-L-M-E-R. I'm 71.
And Mark is one of our premier tour guides. That is a Bobby. And we've got, a dozen here that all know the history. It's all legitimate. Everything. The truth is a lot more fascinating than anything. I'm a screenwriter for Beacon Pictures. I can't write this stuff.
I was going to say, you couldn't make this up.
You can't. You know, it's just
and nobody
incredible.
Would believe you.
Incredible.
Anyway. Yeah, they go, this is not plausible.
No, it's not. It's hard to believe. I mean, there's a little corruption here and there in different cities that you can go to, but for it to be all accepted and managed the way it was, which was a term Mark calls and had heard the older fellows calling the little combination, to have it managed corporately like it was is astounding, really, to handle that $100 million a year in 1963 and no one gripe about it. Everything was above board, yeah, they thought. Yeah, I mean, yeah. And it was, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't there. I am Robert Raines, the executive director of the Gangster Museum of America, 510 Central Avenue in Hot Springs National Park, Arkansas. And you can go to www.tgmoa.com to learn a little bit more about this place and the history of Hot Springs.
Thank you, guys. This has been really fun.
Thank you very much.
Spangled guns upon a bevy of high brown from down the levee, all misfits putting on the ribs.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning.